Welcome to the airport lounge. Table for two gentlemen? Right this way. Here's your booth. Have a great show.
Welcome to the airport lounge, the Winnipeg Jets podcast. Much like Mark Scheifele, questioning our teammates. I'm Mike Guthrie, and I'm joined by my good friend and the maverick to my goose, Vaughn Mitchell. How's it going, buddy?
Well, Mike, as we come to the end of our second season as a podcast, I just have to know. I just have to understand where this podcast is going. I'm in the prime of my podcasting career. I still have so much to improve on, too, and I like where my game is at. I'm only improving, Mike. I like the physical nature of where my podcasting is at, and I'm going to be a better podcaster next year than I was this year. I just have to know where this podcast is going and what the direction is and what the changes are going to be, if any. I have to think about my career and what's best for me. Those are going to be the talks with my agents and my family and stuff like that, and figure out what I really want. So it's going to be a tough podcast.
It will be. Hey, Vaughn, you're fired. Yeah.
Trade me to the Islanders for Matt Barzal.
For Rich and John. So it's been a slice. Good for you.
Yeah, Rich and John. They're going to end up being the Oleg Tverdovsky and the Chad Kilger of the podcasting world. You know. And I will go on
to the Hall of Fame.
I love those guys. They know that. We're just joking around. And, you know, Mike, I was checking my notes and I came across two things. First, we only had one podcast in April, so like the Jets, we really didn't show up for the month of April. And before we go any further forward, I have to apologize to our most recent fake sponsor. Apparently, it isn't tongs, thongs, and bongs. It's actually dongs, thongs, and bongs.
There's no way.
I swear on my life, it's actually dongs, thongs, and bongs. Okay. Which is, of course, a much better name.
Absolutely.
I'm just glad they named it and not the Jets' boring game day entertainment department, who would have called it Tupperware, Underwear, and Glassware.
Do you know how long it took me to find a musical bit with tongs?
It was brilliant.
I was so happy about it. And secondly, how did you find out that it was misnamed? Did somebody...
Well, I checked. There's a picture of the sign of the store on the internet or so. So I don't know how I came across it. I was looking it up again because I want to go there. Who wouldn't?
How about a date? We'll do it together. Yeah. I like it.
I just thought that there was a guy named Tong, and he sold thongs and bongs, and I misunderstood. The first time it was brought across, I guess I was so excited to work it into this that I didn't realize the actual store's name is Dongs, Thongs, and Bongs.
All right.
Well, which is, I'm glad they have a more diversified product line, but.
All right. Well, on that note, check-in time. All right. Well, I don't think we need to go into the bevy
micro games. Detail.
Yeah, of the remaining season. The last podcast we had, we were basically at the end of the season, mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. We were eliminated from the playoffs. As in true Jets fashion, we really turned it on at the end. We won a bunch of games and played quite well. And kudos to them. But there was nothing... I think we're sort of burying the lead if we start with... sort of the micro analysis of any of the games. I think probably the bulk of the analysis here comes afterwards. But, you know, Vaughn, I'll cede the floor to you in terms of, like, was there anything extractable from the last few games of the season?
Well, it wasn't any different than the rest of the year, actually. There was good mixed with the bad. There was a game in which they got tremendously outplayed in Carolina, and then came back home 3 days later and soundly defeated the Avalanche, and then somehow managed to win a game at home 4-0. And it was the most boring game. There was no energy in the building. And, you know, then they go on to defeat the Flames 3-1 at home, which was an IPA eye test Friday night. I was at that game, had a good time. So that was a good thing. That was my last game of the year. And then, you know, an incredibly up and down game against the Kraken, in which they had this disastrous second period followed by, you know, the bang, bang, bang of the third period and the send off of Dennis Bayak. So it was all over the map, just like the Jets were for most of the season. So
yeah, and again, I all the subtle jabs that I've taken at Bayak over the past couple of years, in jest, he's going to be missed
for sure.
He's a professional, and you know, probably punches above his pay grade in terms of what we get for Jets broadcasting, and his plus minus affinity stats aside, he's great at what he does. B, he seems like a genuinely good human being, and the sort of 2-day testimonial to him sort of backs that up. And he's going to be missed. I don't know who's going to call this. I hope this means that Kevin Sawyer is gone. I hope they start fresh. But cheers to him. Yeah, he really is good at what he does.
Absolutely. I think he was really the Kurt Kielbach of Jets 2.0. Oh, his voice became synonymous with who the Jets were. I do find it interesting in the montages that they shared that they didn't include, which I think is his best call ever, was Patrick Laine's third goal in his first hat-trick night against the Toronto Maple Leafs, the overtime winner. I think that was my favorite call of his, and it wasn't featured. You know, I had my dad over for dinner tonight, and as you know, he's a little bit older. He's 84 years old, and we were talking about Dennis Bayak, and his concern with Dennis Bayak is, oh, too many stats. And I'm like, what? Too much stats? So then I have to poke my dad a little bit, you know, love my dad, but, you know, have to poke the bear a little bit. And I was telling him that, you know, I'm pretty sure that Leah Hextall was going to be the play-by-play, you know, in person for next. Oh boy. Oh, he liked that one even less than the stats. So in terms of stats and useless stats, I do want to share one quick one that I like to track that we haven't talked a lot about this year, but we did spend some time talking about it last year, and that's the Jets' record when they scored different goals. Now, a lot was made on the broadcast, and rightly so, about the Jets' record when they score three goals. We had talked about what happens when the Jets score four goals. And let me just quickly break it down because we have an entire season to look at. When the Jets score four goals, their record was 29-1-2. So very, very impressive. When the Jets scored only three goals, their record was 7-4-4. Not bad. Not bad, but in the end of the day, 7 wins, 4 losses, 18 points. So what the broadcast really was making is that the three-goal threshold was magic for the Jets, and their record was 36-5-6 overall when scoring three or more goals, which is pretty good. But really, it was that fourth goal that triggered the magic record. And when the Jets scored two goals or less, their record was 3-27-5. So, you know, there's a lot going on there. There's a lot to break out. And I don't think we're going to get into it this podcast. We're going to, I think, have one more podcast this year where we might get into a deeper analysis of what went on during the season and maybe talk about some things like the power play, the penalty kill, and those types of things. But just for as a last sort of, ode to Dennis Bayak, I thought I'd share that. It was something that they followed quite closely on the broadcast. I think they got it partially right. They were stealing our narrative once again. We are a narrative setting podcast. As in final ode to Dennis Bayak, I share that stat with you.
Oh, very cool. And kudos again to him. Well said, Vaughn. So we'll do a quick pre-boarding announcements over. So, you know, the remaining games of the season we'll pick some folks for the penalty box
and for first class.
I'm going to ride your coattails. I selfishly was a bit disinterested in the last two games, and I have my answers, but I'll let you kick us off.
I know it just with the way the season ended, and it was hard to say first class. It was you just couldn't get it out of your mouth. So this week's first class assignment, or maybe this month's first class assignment, based on how often we podcast. First class assignment is brought to you as ever by First Mining Gold, providing first class gold mining development advice and services since 2015. For me, it's a tie. Oh. Took the easy way out. I'm going to go Nikolai Ehlers and Dylan Sandberg. Now, I'll speak super quick about Nikolai Ehlers. What really stood out to me was, you know, he was on the threshold of 30 goals. His beautiful backhand pass
that was nice,
to Blake Wheeler. When he's chasing 30, he draws everyone over to him. He gets the puck over to the captain. The captain scores a beautiful goal. That was a beautiful goal. A really selfless play that was acknowledged by his teammates. And I'm acknowledging Nikolai Ehlers and asking him to come up to first class and have some tackle salad. We're having tackle salad tonight in first class. But it's a mix of beef and ground beef and ground pork. So it's special. It's delicious. So Nikolai Ehlers and then Dylan Sandberg. To me, he's impressed me.
Well, you're all in on this, eh?
Absolutely. You know, I didn't give him a full grade when we get into our grades a little bit later on, but I feel he's done a great job. He was he had some ice water in his veins out there. I'm not saying he's a complete and finished product, but he made a fantastic case to be part of the regular rotation. So I thought he had a strong close to the season. He was good enough to push our man, 6'7", Logan Stanley, out of the lineup. So I'm giving my first class assignment to Nikolai Ehlers and Dylan Sandberg. How about you?
Yeah, I had Nikolai Ehlers. I was looking at some stats in terms of sort of the GAR stats. Connor had been leading throughout the season, and then since Ehlers been back from his injury, he's clearly statistically just not. I mean, him. It's him and Connor, and then there's a huge gap. But he really is our best forward, in my opinion, and both statistically and again, he's very frustrating. There are 2-3 times a game that I just really, that's all I say is really, but just his ability to drive play and even on the defensive end is outstanding. And so to me, he's the, you know, he's sort of the crux to our building blocks moving forward. So he's my pick for first class.
Awesome. Let's move quickly to the penalty box because we have lots to talk about. Again, our sponsor, Dongs, Thongs, and Bongs. Tired of driving to 3 different stores to meet all your thong, dong, and bong needs? Now there's everything you need in one place for this summer. Come visit us at 1316 Main Street. Again, real place, not a real sponsor. Okay, so who am I putting in the penalty box this week? I think we're going to have the same guy. It's hard for me to say. Well, it's easier for me to say now. Mark Scheifele. You know, I got 7 words. Here's my analysis. Here's my analysis in 7 words. He did it his way, I guess.
It's sad. And I, you know, I said this to you, Vaughn, sort of privately. Is that I don't dislike Mark Scheifele. Seems like an affable dude. But you just can't come out as an assistant captain and sort of quasi-leader of this team and give a press conference like that and expect anything other than the reaction that's being pronounced both online and otherwise. He's extremely talented. But again, I'm not going to pat myself on the back. But right from the get-go, or at least the first few games of the season, I was like, something's off. I watched a lot of Mark Scheifele. He was never super interested in defense, but he seems really disinterested at all in everything. And this is sort of the culmination of that, and we'll get into it, but I agree. He's in my penalty box too.
Yeah, lots to talk about there. I'm sure it will seep its way into subsequent podcasts, but we have a bit of a year-end thing here. What we've done is we've set up a grading system, and what we're going to do is we'll say the grade, and then we'll note who we have at that grade. So we're not going to... Yeah. We're going to end up grading every player, but we're not just going to go through the list by name and then talk about a name.
Good practice, team. Okay, it's time for the easiest part of any coach's job. the cut. Now, while I wasn't able to cut everyone I wanted to, I have cut a lot of you. Wendell is cut. Rudy is cut. Janie, you're gone. Steven, I like your hustle. That's why it was so hard to cut you. Congratulations! The rest of you made the team!
We're talking about a grading sort of threshold, and then who's within that threshold, and then compare and contrast who we have there. So just to kick it off, we start with A+. We'll start at the top. I think that's a logical place to start. You know what? We didn't make the playoffs. There were some good performances this year. I have no one gets an A+ this year.
I have no one. No one gets, you can't, no one can get an A+. We had some good players, good contributors, but no one's getting an A+ this year.
You know, if we had finished last in the league last year and then we get to, you know, a whisker of the playoffs, we can maybe say, you know, wow, did we ever make progress?
Yeah,
no, this was a completely underachieving year. No A pluses.
Okay.
Let's move on to the grade of A. Okay. I have two players getting the grade of A, which, you know, I think if we were doing this, if we were doing this on Twitter, people would attack us. We would be dead. We would be murdered there, you know. But in all honesty,
in an Elon Musk version of Twitter where everyone is equal and all opinions are valuable.
The only thing that would save us is if Elon Musk said something super controversial while people were attacking us, and that would distract them, you know, like deflect.
Yeah, showing videos of rockets.
Yeah. So I got two people that get the grade of A. It's Kyle Connor and Josh Morrissey. Super fast. Kyle Connor, I think, really expanded his game this year, and I'm not just talking about going to 47 goals. I felt his contribution on the penalty kill was outstanding. I felt, and we've talked about this, he was harder to play against. You don't have to hit people to be hard to play against. He was in passing lanes. He was hard on sticks. He was creating turnovers. He expanded his game significantly this year, and I want to recognize it. And Josh Morrissey, by the end of the season, wow, what a player. He was dominating out there, and I really think those two guys had a great year. Who do you got is an A?
Yeah, it's more interesting if we disagree, but I have that as well. Kyle Connor and Josh Morrissey. And Kyle Connor still has to work on the defensive side of his game, but I'm going to give him a huge pass because he is a one-man sort of scoring and offensive generating machine. And I don't think Kyle Connor, in the best of times, is going to be the sort of a stalwart defensive forward. And quite honestly, I'm not really interested in him doing so. Like you say, I think he improved quite a bit. And, you know, my feelings, Josh Morrissey, I think, if I went back and tracked it, he's probably in the in first class more than any other player this year. So
yeah, it's a good point.
It seems like a natural fit. So totally agree.
All right, so that moves us to the A-B+ category. So a little bit of flex here. I have five people in this category, which is a lot. We got seven people in a team for the team that didn't make the playoffs. We have seven people, at least in my grading system, getting an A or an A- or B+, which are pretty good marks. So I have Pierre-Luc Dubois in that category. I thought he had a really good year, but there were some lulls, as there were for Nikolaj Ehlers. Again, both those guys ended up with 28 goals, but and they had stretches where they were both dominant, but stretches where they were a little bit invisible and inconsistent. Paul Stastny, I thought, did all the little things throughout. He was the most consistent Jet and played at the highest level. For his abilities, I think 21 goals at 38 years old is impressive. Dylan DeMello, the perfect complement to Josh Morrissey, really, I think, stabilized and allowed Josh Morrissey to get back to where, or to get to where we all hoped and thought he would be. And lastly, for me, Eric Comrie, 920 save percentage in 19 games. I thought he did a great job for what he is. I'm not saying, you know, he's, you know what? I do think the Jets should re-sign him. I think he showed enough this year. I don't know if he'll be able to fit in under the cap, but for what we asked him to do, he performed that very well. And for that, I give him that grade. Who do you got, Mike?
So very similar, but I'm less generous. I have Ehlers, Stastny, and DeMello in the A-B+ range. PLD, and this is going to be blasphemous got bumped down to a B. And
Eric, I kind of see it.
Eric Comrie, just sort of lack of sample size, and I get it. Just more of a career award that I don't think he is a spectacular goalie. I think he's a solid to maybe above average goalie, and I think we selectively played him in games that maybe elevated his stats to a certain extent. Again, I thought he played well down the stretch, but he did rack up some losses as soon as we started playing quality teams, albeit his goals against average and save percentages were, you know, quite good. But I had him as a B. But
okay.
The either Stastny and DeMello to me were, I thought, solid throughout. And I'll take us into the sort of B range.
Sure.
I had, just, you know, as you did, I had Connor Hellebuyck, PLD, and Comrie. In this one, PLD, love the guy. I think we need to re-sign him. I think he is a walking id. He's just all of, like, some games he's extravagantly awesome, and then other games he's got one hand on a stick, he's taking dumb penalties, yeah. He's out of position. It just is a maturation process, and he needs to mature.
Mm-hmm.
I love the raw talent. I love the effort. Nothing about his game I don't think can't improve drastically under the right coaching and the right tutelage. Mm-hmm. There were some raw parts of his game this year that, and he had a huge sort of swoon for 12, 13, I think it was 14 games where
yep.
he was kind of left off the score sheet. So I left him there. Who do you have at B?
In B, it's a small category for me because I think the season was top heavy and bottom heavy. I really like what Mason Appleton brought to the Jets when he came back. It didn't really manifest itself into points. In the 19 games that he played. But I thought he was a fantastic addition to the third line. He plays that fast, hard-checking kind of game, I think. I like to see, and the Jets want to see out of their third line. So I have him as a B, even though it's a relatively small sample size. But I'm kind of building off who he was before with the Jets, and he kind of picked up where he left off. So I'm glad to see him back. And Connor Hellebuyck, I think this is a super fair grade for him. You know, he is an elite goalie that didn't quite play to his level of potential. He ended the year with a .910 save percentage and 66 games overall. That's a heavy workload. But, you know, he played well, especially 5-on-5. His save percentage from the high danger area in the penalty kill and even 5-on-5 a little bit wasn't great. Or sorry, his 5-on-5 was good, but he wasn't great on special teams. And I think he had a solid year, nothing to worry about too much, but he didn't deserve a grade of any higher than a B. So I only had the two guys in B. I'll jump into C+, and then you follow. I had three guys at C+. Blake Wheeler, pretty much based on a strong finish to the year. I thought he was the last third to quarter of the season, I thought he was a competent hockey player. Now, I'm extracting his cap hit, all right? I'm just looking at his play, right? Because if we do look at it as a cap hit,
yeah, that's fair.
We're not getting our money's worth.
He was really
sure.
good with either of those last two games.
Yeah, I thought he was, and maybe it's been an injury thing. Anyways, I thought he salvaged a poor season towards the end, ended with 17 goals. So 60 points, obviously that production is down, but, you know, I give him a C+. Adam Lowry, unspectacular. I think he does what we ask him to do. He penalty kills reasonably well, creates chances on the penalty kill. He checks very well when we want to match him up against the other team's best players. Doesn't provide a lot of offense, which is maybe a downside. But I don't think there's anything there to really criticize. And then I put Dylan Sandberg in there at a C+ overall. Only 15 games, but I wanted to give him a score. And I wanted to be clear that I scored him higher than the other defenseman, which we'll get to in a bit. So I had three guys at C+. Blake Wheeler, Adam Lowry, Dylan Sandberg. Solid but unspectacular seasons.
Nope, fair enough. I had Appleton in that range. You have him as a B. I have him as a C+. Blake Wheeler, I had him as a, again, this is sort of a cop out, but kind of between a C plus and a C. Again, you got to be Bayesian. You got to be, you got to change as new information comes. And I'm not super hopeful for his ability moving forward, but he played pretty darn good.
He did.
He did. He was good. And with Ehlers, he didn't look out of place. He's a train wreck defensively to a certain extent. So he was okay. And Adam Lowry, I waffled. I never want him give him lower than a B. But his contributions seemed kind of limited to the penalty kill.
Yeah.
Outside of that, even the 5-on-5 numbers kind of dictate that he's not a loss, but sort of a break even for that. So I had the same thing. I just added Appleton. And then if we go to C.
Go.
I had Sveshnikov.
Yep.
That guy has had a year. He's been up and down all aspects of the lineup. I get it. He's probably not everyone's cup of tea, especially as a coach. He makes some dumb moves and gets himself out of position and takes stupid penalties. But he had that really good stretch with Dubois and Connor to start, and it has always been sort of a spark plug for us. And a guy that I think I would like to see, if we can anyway, keep him moving forward. And that's all I had. That's all I had in the C's.
I had three guys in the C's. I also had Svechnikov in there, and I agree with you. He was kind of all over the map. And what I liked was he does bring a bit of size to the lineup, doesn't skate super well, but has the ability to play up and down the lineup. So he's a bit of a, you know, bit of a Swiss Army knife in that regard. And I do like the fact that in a pinch, he can play effectively with PLD and Kyle Connor. And I think that's his versatility offers the Jets some options, and I like that. Even though there were some games, especially when he was appearing on the third and fourth line, he wasn't particularly effective. I don't think that there's a strong case to be made for him being a permanent member and being permanently affixed to PLD and Kyle Connor, but the possibility is there, which I liked. I also gave a C to Dominic Toninato, just because he's just the fourth line guy, and he's the Italian tornado. I love the Italian tornado. He's just fine on the fourth line. He's probably one of the better fourth line players we've ever had here, and it's a low bar. Like
fair
enough. Nate Thompson, like we had to put up with that guy for a long time. And lastly, I had pre-press conference Mark Scheifele is getting a C. 29 goals.
I only got judged by post.
Fair enough. So pre-press conference, Mark Scheifele with 29 goals, 70 points is not to be sneezed at. So why a C? Well, that's kind of like a B plus or an A for offense, and he gets an F for defense. So if you break the exam up into two parts, the offense and defense, I think it kind of rounds out to a C. But that, to be clear, that's pre-press conference Mark Scheifele. So I had the three guys at C. And I'll quickly jump into the D grade.
Yeah.
I want to be clear here. I think the number one problem with the Jets, well, the number one problem was coaching. Okay, number one.
Yeah.
I think the number two problem is the underperformance of three highly paid defensemen, Neil Pionk, Nate Schmidt, and Brendan Dillon. Even though I was saying this to my dad earlier tonight, I applaud Chevy for making the move and bringing those two guys in. It was fair play, okay? Fair play. We thought we had a shot. We took our shot. We spent some assets. No one was saying this was a disaster. Nobody was saying this was a disaster.
To the contrary, we were all really, really excited about the additions.
But so, yeah, and even the numbers nerds said these are decent defensemen that will help us, right? And they all played terribly. I was also saying to my dad tonight,
is Pionk bad now?
He might be bad. That's the thing. He might be. I don't know. But here, I genuinely believe this. If we had removed Pionk, Schmidt, and Dillon from the lineup and played Stamberg, Hainala, and Kovacevic all year,
we would not be
worse off.
No.
It would be a little bit hyperbolic and theatrical to say we would have made the playoffs if we had inserted those rookies.
We wouldn't have been worse.
We absolutely would not. I would go to my grave saying we would not have been worse.
That's morbid.
And we'd have $14 extra million you know, in the bank. And lastly, as a D, Zach Sanford. I mean, my analysis of him, meh. Like, I don't know, what else do you say about, well, he's got some nice hands. Well, he lumbers around the ice like he's incredibly disinterested, you know? So those are my Ds, Neil Pionk, Nate Schmidt, Brendan Dillon, and Zach Sanford. Who do you got?
Yeah, I had Toninato in the D range. I had the same thing. I had Pionk, Schmidt, and Dillon in right in that sweet spot. And at Sanford, as you'll see, is all the way down to the holy F about for F.
Toninato is also a tremendously good-looking man, by the way. I think that counts for something.
You judge how you want. This isn't Miss America. I'm not going to tell you how to judge.
It's Mr. Winnipeg.
That's fine. Good looking aside, he doesn't suck. It's just I'm so tired of our bottom six just being so pedestrian when you see other teams have the bottom six be solid contributors. And I know and understand that a lot of that is coaching. We have wildly misplayed our third and fourth line and the development, all of that. Anyway, we'll get into that. But so my F's are
trying to get ahead.
Well, I'm sorry. There's just no way that we can keep you on.
I don't even really work here.
Mark Scheifele, again, he was probably at a D before that press conference, and that was just fair awful. Enough. I have Harkins. I was going to give an F minus to Logan Stanley, but let's not pile on the guy because he's very tall. Vesalainen, F. Brooks, F. And Sanford, F. Those are my Fs.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of alignment here. Post-press conference, Mark Scheifele gets an F. Jansen Harkins played himself into obscurity. My dad's like, oh, I really like that Harkins. Dad, do you even watch the games? Anyways.
I like how you fight with your 84-year-old dad, but that's
good. I know. Well, I got to beat up someone.
It's not Monty's.
No. They tore that place down. Logan Stanley, his stats are 6'7". Christian Vesalainen, Adam Brooks, and Nate Beaulieu. I mean, we played Nate Beaulieu. Like,
oh, and I forgot then, about Beaulieu. I didn't even have him on my list.
I know. Like, we played Nate Beaulieu, and then when Beaulieu was hurt, we put in Logan Stanley, and we expect to win games. Ugh. I don't know.
Just a suck fest.
And the last category I have, sorry, yeah, do you, is there anything?
No, you okay. Go ahead. Yeah, this is a good one.
Incomplete but promising. I had three. I this is a little bit sample size, and I'm going a little bit against my criteria because I did include Sandberg in the overall grading system. But for me, Cole Perfetti, Ville Heinola, and Morgan Barron. Perfetti played 18 games, not a lot of points, but showed enough that I think he's an NHL player.
Yep.
I'm optimistic about him. Only 12 games for Ville Heinola. Apparently, he's having a strong playoffs with the Moose again.
Oh my
Hopefully,
goodness.
A new regime can come in and just grab hold of that. And Morgan Barron, I liked him. I think that
you do you?
And this is the Zach Sanford thing. This is the Zach Sanford thing. I think Morgan Barron, Adam Lowry, and Mason Appleton get a year to play together. I'm not saying they're lighting the lamp a lot. I'm saying that's going to be a good line, a physical line that can skate and crunch.
Yeah, he's got energy. He's a big guy.
I think those are three players that that look very promising for us in the future. Again, I think Cole Perfetti could fill a top six role. I think Ville Heinola could fill a top four role. And I think Morgan Barron can fill a top nine role. So, I mean, those are important roles. They're not, you know, future Art Ross Trophy winners or Rocket Richard Trophy winners for sure. But fair. I do think they are going to be night in and night out Winnipeg Jets in a couple of years. I think, I'm speculating. I think Perfetti and Barron especially did enough to acquit themselves to be future Jets. Ville Heinola, let's face it, we don't know what the organization thinks about him. I saw enough that I feel even better about him. But yeah, I'll turn it back to you. What are your thoughts?
No, and we've got a question coming up. We'll transition quick to our in-flight entertainment.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
And so we'll get five questions in quasi 5 minutes. And the last one touches on this. So yeah. I'll kick us off.
Sure.
And I'm going to, maybe I'll play some sad bagpipe music behind whatever you say here, Vaughn. Will Mark Scheifele be a Winnipeg Jet for the 2022-2023 season?
I honestly think it's 50-50. I don't think we're at a binary yes-no. 100% yes or 100% no. I do think he's got some bridges to mend. And this will largely be dictated by dynamics to which we are not privy to, which is the interpersonal ones within the group. I do think, like, hearing today that the market for him is going to be outstanding. He's relatively young at 28. He's got some term left on his contract. He's got 2 years left on his contract at a very, very accessible $6.25 million. I think it's in and around there.
Yeah.
So he's, there is a lot of people in the media, a lot of the insiders are saying the load we could get for Mark Scheifele will be fantastic. Some people are throwing names around like Matt Barzal, who's apparently some shine has fallen off on the island. I think that would be awesome. And so I do think that it's possible that he's back. It certainly doesn't feel like that today. Right? But things change, right? We feel differently about Mark Scheifele today than we did a week ago. I'm not saying we'll feel differently in 1 week. We're far more likely to feel worse about Scheifele as the summer goes on than better. But I do think that there is a 50% better chance that he is not a Winnipeg Jet next season. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm out, man. Something like that publicly, it either lacks of self-awareness or... he really is, he was sugarcoating it because he's so upset and his real thoughts are, I am out, but I'm trying to rein back my disdain for this franchise. And again, I don't know, I'm not behind the scenes. I don't know what happened. Where's Wheeler? I thought these guys were best buds. But it was clear, and I said this earlier, it was clear this year that he was not interested in everything Jets. And the fact that you would say that I'm at the prime of my career and I need to reevaluate publicly at the end presser, I don't want that guy as my assistant captain.
Well, there's a sense of entitlement there, right?
It's spoiled. I don't like it. Again, grow up, man. Yeah. Grow up. Like, you're a man. You're 27 years old. Be a man. Even if you think that, don't say that because you're supposed to be a leader and you get paid millions of dollars to be a leader. Don't be an asshole. And he's being an asshole, and I'm out. Like, again, if he comes back, I want fair value for him, and if we can get Barzal or whomever it is. But I don't want this kind of petulance. And the fact that we haven't had a head coach in 4 years to develop him has really hurt him. Because his maturity, obviously, to me, is way below where it should be. He's a kid. He's a child. He's acting like a child. Get kids out. I don't want him here anymore.
Yeah, I hear you. And... you know, something I've been thinking about that's interesting, like if he is, you know, a locker room bully, a locker room toxic guy, you know, he's, you know, petulant in the room, bossy, manipulative. What team do you think you can walk in on?
Right.
And
where are you
going
to go?
Do all that stuff. And like, so why are you doing it now? Like, you're going to go somewhere else and change your stripes?
Be smart enough to realize it hurts your overall value.
Yeah.
Like, you're not, like, if you want to get paid on your next contract, that's like anybody who's paying you is going to look at, well, he quit on the Jets and openly mocked them. Or, you know, not openly mocked is a strong word, but like he.
Then again, Evander Kane keeps getting signed.
And
whatever we think of Mark Scheifele, whatever it is he's doing, he's not Evander Kane. Okay. Next question.
Yeah.
Should the Jets re-sign Paul Stastny?
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
I know.
Yes, absolutely. 1,000%. Yes.
Contingent on a 1 year on deal.
1 year
deal
for.
1 year deal.
Two? What do you think?
Well, I mean, I do think
two,
that.
Five?
I think with everything that happened this year, it might take a little bit to get him back.
Three.
I do think, yeah. I think it has to be a little bit less than the 375. It just depends. I think what's going to be driven by. That exit interview with Kevin Cheveldayoff and what Chevy says to him and how Stastny fits into that plan. Now, we do know that, you know, Chevy thinks extremely highly of Stastny And, you know, but there is also that possibility. Stassi's like, you know, F this, I'm out of here. This place is falling apart, and I don't believe they can fix it, and I don't want this place to be my last hockey experience. So that's possible. I think if the Jets, but the question is really framed, and I wrote the question, and it should have been more clear. if we have the opportunity to re-sign him, should we approach him and offer him a one-year deal for 3.5 or 3.25 or whatever? And I agree with you. I think the answer is yes. He was solid all year. He was healthy. He was engaged every night. He was doing the little things, scoring 20 goals at 38 years old. And he's
in the room.
Yeah.
Always. Yep. He seemed like, again, I don't agree with his side politics, whatever that might be. And
exactly.
I'm not speculating on, like, but he seems to be the, every time I hear him speak about hockey room culture, he's the first person I agree with. Where it's like, yeah, everyone's got to be accountable. Yeah, everyone can't be looking out for themselves. And the fact that he was so vocal about it, again, criminy. Make him the captain. Again, he sat there beside Blake Wheeler, and Blake Wheeler was doing his tap dance, and he was like he just cut to the chase. So, yeah I agree.
So sign here's some, absolutely, but here's something that I heard today. So the worst case scenario for the Jets isn't that Paul Stastny's comments were directed at Mark Scheifele. There is some speculation that he was speaking about Kyle Connor. That's the worst case scenario. Because if Stastny was speaking about Connor, and we obviously know there's
this, you know,
just through the some of the various online stuff, it was a local guy, a sports guy, a reporter,
really,
a columnist. I mean, it wasn't possible. Paul Friesen, but it was someone like that. Like, but it was, anyways. I can't remember, but there was some people out there that speculated that the what was actually said, the words attached themselves a little bit more to Kyle Connor. That's the worst case scenario, because then we have massive problems. If the toxin or the toxic nature of the dressing room can be confined to Mark Scheifele, that's a more solvable problem than if we have a massive problem with Kyle Connor and Mark Scheifele. So, all right. So I think we're both yes on that, providing it's a one-year deal in and around what he got this year, hopefully a little less.
Yeah. Number three, what is the over-under for AAV for PLD's new contract?
A lot of acronyms in that one. So
there's
that's
a lot of that.
Annual average value. Anyways, Pierre, Home Depot. Anyways, I know the number I think, but I think the number, the over-under number would be higher than the number I think he should get because he's not a fully formed player. The number I'm thinking for the annual AAV or the AAV is about 7, but I think if we're betting, well, first of all, I think he gets just from inflation. First of all, you can't say that Scheifele is getting, you know, he's kind of undervalued in his contract at 6.25, which was signed like 5 years ago. Like there's inflation. I think, you know, we're looking at $8 million a year as the over under for PLD.
3.57?
I would go the max. I would always go the max. I mean, because you're way more likely to be getting value at the end of it. Yeah. Because if you get him on a 3 and it turns out super well, well, he's a UFA after those 3. Right. And if it isn't working out, then yeah, you can trade the contract, and you're trading with term, which the other team may like. Pardon me. So I would get him as long as he could. I think for him and his comments, I think he wants to see who the new coach is, because he's had some bad, you know, experiences with coaches. And I think he needs to do more research into the tattooing community in the city and see if they have, you know, the right artist for him. And once he gets that worked out, but the question is, what's the over-under AAV? Maybe 7.5, maybe 8. I think it's high. He's going to be signed as a first-line center, a young guy with a ton of potential who continues to grow. I think it's going to be pretty high. What do you think?
Yeah, I had it lower, quite honestly, but you made some very salient points there. So I'm going to set it at 7.5. And I agree. I don't think we have a choice or an option other than to give him what he wants. What's our alternative? Shifley's out. Yeah. He's going to be our number one centerman. And again, like I said, I do really like his game, and he's got moxie, and you know, we'll see where they land on this sort of, you know, as of this taping, Chevy just got signed to a 3-year extension, which I would love that kind of job security where you have the worst season of
kind come of just work for the government of Manitoba. Come work for the government of Manitoba. Because I am the Kevin Cheveldayoff of the civil service.
Just no, what we should,
what
but
we should
anyway, I yeah, I
what
I
we should say about PLD is that he's an RFA, and we probably have him probably minimum for another 2 years. Now there is a way where that might only be 1 year before he comes a UFA, but I think the Jets do have some say if it goes to arbitration to select a 2-year option. So whatever the arbitrator says, we have to pay. We get to choose the length. We can choose 1 year. I think we would choose 2 years, and then he would become a UFA. So PLD isn't going anywhere. It's just a matter of we just now have the opportunity to sign him to a long-term deal, is my understanding. And we may not be able to do that until after July 1st, but PLD is going nowhere is the point I wanted to get, at least in the short term.
Fair enough. Number four.
Who should the Jets' new coach be?
Oh, my goodness. I'll be perfectly honest for anybody who's still listening. Vaughn, you and I and Rich had gone, like, Trotz is a person, Mark Morris. Like, I wrote a litany of articles on Face Off Hockey Network. And my thing, again, this sounds like kind of a cop-out, but there's sort of two principles. One is that you need to install some sort of defensive system and have accountability to it. And then two, pursuant to number one, accountability. Make sure that whatever you're doing, again, it's just been so obvious these past 2-3 years with Sutter and St. Louis, like, coaching matters. And yep. I just want someone to come in and reset the equilibrium within the Jets Nation. And so, again, I'm not skilled enough to know exactly who the right person for that should be. Chevy's on a short, short leash with me, so make this right.
I agree. I think I know who it shouldn't be. I spent the better part of the last 2 days trying to talk myself into it, but it didn't get very far, to my credit. And that's Mike Babcock and Joel Quenneville.
No.
I think their paradigm is done. And I think they're toxic people, and I don't think they solve the problem. I'm thinking, you know, and the thing is with Barry Trotz, he's currently employed. So for me, it's not an option at this particular moment, but he is an ideal candidate if he were to become available.
Boudreau, too.
Boudreau is now apparently available. The general manager, the general manager of Vancouver today said they're not going to sign him to a contract next year, for next year. So he's looking like he's going to be available. Another guy who I'm interested in is Claude Julien. And I thought part of the reason that we went with the interim tag with I think there was more than one reason, but I think part of the reason we went with an interim coach for the rest of the year was that someone like Claude Julien was tied up with the Canadian Olympic team at that time, right? When Paul Maurice stepped away, the Olympics hadn't yet been canceled, and Claude Julien was the coach of the Olympic team. And he probably wouldn't have wanted to leave that job at such a late time to come take a job for the Jets, and I think he would have been one of the candidates for sure. I also do like that this does, and it would have given Julien the opportunity to watch the Jets from the outside and come in with a working knowledge of what the on-ice product would be. So I think that's part of it. I'm not saying I have backroom information. I just think that some of those stars align.
Yep.
Some of those stars align for me. And then, you know, I do think that that's an option. It's not to say it was a slam dunk going to happen. But I do think that someone like that comes into the room and he carries enough weight. He carries enough, reputation, gravita. That he can gravita to make some of those hard choices that you're talking about. I don't think that like pulling someone up there's this phenomenal coach and he coaches at the University of Denver or the Swift Current Broncos or whoever. No, you know what fuck I mean? That. Like you can't bring that guy, I don't think, into this group. I think you need to bring someone that's a little bit more veteran. I think there's probably a list of very credible, assistant coaches that are ready for a head coaching role that could come in and handle it. And you and I just may not know their name. So I don't think that it's a list of one, but I'm thinking the odds on favorite would be someone like a Claude Julien.
Yeah, no, fair enough. And I can't I agree with you that I don't think you can just pull someone off the street because I think this team needs...
There needs to be an adult in the room. Yeah. You know?
Because we don't have enough of those. So number five is, of the several young players projected to be in the Jets lineup next year, Perfetti, Barron, Hainala, Sandberg, which ones do you think will have the biggest impact?
Well, for me, I think it's quite easy. I think it's Sandberg. I think he's the most physically ready. I think he's the guy that is the most likely to play 82 games next year and have a meaningful role. I'm not suggesting he's going to put up 15 goals and 60 points and make us forget about Josh Morrissey. I think, the runner-up to that is the Cole Perfetti. But he's coming off a pretty major injury that had a massive setback. He's a smaller guy in a man's league, and that's going to take some time to learn to be able to make an impact. I think he's got the skills to do it. But the question is, who's going to have the breakout season next year? Barron and Hainala, I like them both. I think they're going to be around. But I think the guy we're going to notice of those four and of the young players, the guy we're going to notice in a night-in and night-out basis the most is going to be Sandberg.
Cole Perfetti, Mom Spaghetti. Yeah. It is happening. I'm
love it.
Like, I love him. His vision, and again, agreed. I'm probably projecting to a certain extent, because Nibana, you probably know this. I wasn't the fastest hockey player. I wasn't the biggest hockey player. But my big claim to fame is I could see the game, and I love the way that he sees the game. And
for our listeners, there may be some physical similarities between the young Cole Perfetti and our learned friend, Michael Guthrie.
Maybe.
Possibly.
Maybe not. But yeah, I just love him. And I like Sandberg, and I don't disagree that he probably, if we're betting with our head rather than our heart, that's probably the best impact player for next year. I'm all in. I'm putting all the chips all in. I'm going Vaughn Mitchell, Mark Scheifele all in. So we'll see what happens.
What could go wrong? Nothing. All right. I love it.
Nice. Well, I think that'll wrap us up. We don't have any. We have zero games. Hey, Winnipeg Jets fans, do yourselves a favor. Don't watch the playoffs for a week, 2 weeks. It makes you feel better. But Vaughn, you want to take us out?
I will. The only thing I would say is let's cheer for the Rangers and turn that second-round draft pick into a first-round draft pick.
Yes, good call.
All right, so fellow travelers, that's it for this episode of the podcast. Thanks for joining us in the Airport Lounge, the official Face-Off Hockey Network podcast for the Winnipeg Jets. Check us out on Twitter at AirportLounge55, on the interweb at thefhn.net, with all episodes also available on Apple, Spotify, and Overcast podcasts. Be sure to come back next week or next time to the Airport Lounge, because the first round is always on us. Until then, go Jets, go.
Go Jets. Boys always shot them. The real gangsta ass niggas don't flex nuts, because real gangsta ass niggas know they got them. And everything's cool in the mind of a gangster, because gangsta ass niggas think deep. Up 365, ain't no 24/7, because real gangsta ass niggas don't sleep. And all I gotta say to you, wanna be cocksucker pussy pranksters. Dies down, what the fuck you going to do? Damn, it feels good to be a gangster.